The Opotiki Council and local iwi say their plans to lift the town out of poverty are being stymied by government bureaucracy. The council and iwi have worked together to develop the country's largest marine farm, which they say will bring more than 300 jobs and millions of dollars to the region. The farm, which is majority owned by local iwi Te Whakatohia, is fully consented but not yet up and running. All that stands in the way is the need to provide boat access from the farm to the silted Opotiki harbour. The council has already granted consents for plans for two groins at the harbour entrance, which will create a minimum channel depth of about 4 metres, and has asked the government to provide the $25 million seed funding for this under its regional economic development initiatives. The council says the government was initially very positive about the plans, but they now feel like they've hit a brick wall in Wellington, despite the fact the entire project is dependent on it to continue. With us now is the Chief Executive of the Opotiki District Council, Aileen Laurie, and Arihia Tōra of the Whakatohea Māori Trust Board, a Director of Eastern Sea Farms, which is the majority owner of the new marine farm. She's also a District Councillor. Kia ora, good morning.
Kia ora, good morning.
Aileen, first of all to you, why is this project seen as so crucial, really, to Opotiki?
I guess to understand that, you need to understand a little bit about the Opotiki District. A district of around 9,000 people. It has a social welfare spend that varies between 15 and 23 million a year for that small population. It's a district without very much flat land. It's 75% of the district is unrateable, and the district has one of the highest levels of deprivation in the country. But the community don't want it to be that way. The community are trying to do something about it, and they see the mussel farm as being hugely important to lift the economic well-being of the community. And to make that happen, we need a harbour entrance and some infrastructure to support it.
Arihia, how important do you see this, particularly for local iwi?
Look, it's critical. I was just reading a statement from a book which was titled Reminiscences of the War in New Zealand, and it talked about at the time of the invasion in 1865, the 500 militia that came to town, and they described Opotiki as a veritable paradise. In terms of what we provided, we had our own poultry, pigs, cattle, horses, kumara. We traded our crops. We were fully integrated. We processed our crops. We owned our own trading ships. We were entrepreneurs. We are entrepreneurs. We were commercially integrated into society. We want that back. We know we can do that, and that's why it's so critical. We have no land. That was taken in the confiscation. But we have the sea. We have this property rights over the sea, and we're just keen to move with this.
This plan has been under discussion for some time. How much has been achieved so far, Aileen?
Oh, crikey. Well, we've been underway for close on 12 years. We've been through consent processes, appeal processes. The harbour itself went through RMA processes without any appeals to Environment Court, which is quite staggering for a project of this magnitude. We've done feasibility. We're right up to the final design, basically ready to tender the project now. We just need to close the gap on the funding.
So there's clearly been a considerable investment, not only in time, but also financially to get to this point?
Yeah, council alone will have spent in the order of $3 million to date, some of that grant funded from organisations that support us. The wider region, I think, probably around $12 million in terms of the aquaculture investigations, the harbour entrance and the Whakatohea's investment in the actual mussel farm.
So what exactly have you asked for and who have you asked it from?
Well, we have briefed successive governments over the last 12 years. We've kept the governments and major parties briefed around it, and there's always been an understanding that there would be a funding gap, and we've only ever had encouragement to keep on going with the project. So the places we've been through the Department of Conservation and Fisheries departments through for the consent processes. We've talked with Ministry for Business, Innovation and Employment. We've talked to primary industries, particularly the aquaculture unit. Infrastructure unit and Treasury, New Zealand Transport Agency, and given the social benefits, we've talked to the Ministry of Social Development. So we've talked to a lot of people about it, and it's now reaching the time where we need that commitment.
Arihia, it sounds like there's been a lot of hope that you and the council, the iwi, have pushed together in full hope that you would get the help you need to just get you over the finishing line.
It is, and funny you say that. You know, hope is, the interpretation of hope is expect with confidence. And this has given our town hope, and we need to expect in confidence that they can have the right for jobs. They have the right to live and grow up here and be able to be gainfully employed. So, yes, there is a lot of hope that's been created by this twin project. You walk through the middle of town and just about every second shop has got a picture of the harbour development. So it's a very unique situation, and we're holding our hands in this, and you know, the iwi are doing their bit in terms of the commercial investment. We've spent almost $10 million just to get us to this stage, but you know, we'd be grateful if central government could come to the party with investing in a bit of infrastructure.
Aileen, do you still have hope? I mean, it sounds like you feel you've hit a brick wall here and you're just not able to get that, $25 million you need from a fund put aside for projects like this to go forward.
As I see it, the issue is that we don't seem to fit any particular agency. So there seems to be quite a lot of interest in central government. We seem to have a lot of support, but there doesn't seem to be a single fund or a single place to go looking for the money. From what we're told, there certainly is some support for us, but we don't seem to fit the Wellington mould particularly well. But, you know, we're a small community. I think it's not really up to us to be trying to work out where to find it. I think we really need somebody to say, yes, we want to do this, make it happen.
I'd like you to comment on this. The Economic Development Minister, Stephen Joyce, we approached him. He wouldn't be interviewed, but his office has given us this statement this morning. The Minister is well briefed on the project and is very keen to see more private sector investment in the infrastructure because that is the key part of the proposal. It's difficult for the government to invest taxpayers' money in a port when it doesn't happen elsewhere around the country, and it could be seen as a real precedent for other ports that would like to see some free taxpayer cash. That's a response from the Minister this morning.
Yeah.
What's your gut reaction to that, Aileen?
Oh, well, we've certainly heard that from the Minister, and we've taken that on board and actually gone and tested that. And we've tested that with some major companies who've come back to us and said, hey, we're really interested in investing in all the opportunities around this, but what you're talking about is essentially a road. You're talking about a road from the processing plant to the farm and to get the equipment out there and to bring the product ashore. So in that respect, it's no different to the Tauranga Eastern Link, which is used to convey goods to port and to farm. So we've gone and asked that question of companies we think may be interested, and they've said, no, this is appropriately publicly funded infrastructure.
Arahia, you know you're in trouble, I think, when a minister talks about the dangers of setting a precedent. It's not a word that's liked in parliaments around the world, that other ports would like some pre-taxpayer cash. What's your response to those comments?
In terms of the mussel farm, we're on our second phase of development, 4 years of growing spat and selling it to third parties. We're growing mussels and for the local market and for export and to prove the financial viability. So we're still moving. We've got to get this 4 years of work done in terms of finalising commercial viability, and we're still full of hope that as a result of the work that we'll be doing out there, that the infrastructure investment will come to pass.
Aileen, I think, somewhere between 10 and 12 million spent so far on this project. Why can't the council come up with the $25 million? If it's potentially such a good investment, surely the money could be there if the government doesn't come up with it.
I guess we have to go back to the state of the local community. We talked about there being 9,000 residents, that the social welfare spend is very high. In terms of council's financials, we are putting in some money in terms of having some skin in the game here. But associated with this upgrade is also a sewerage upgrade, and those two projects effectively take us to our debt cap. So the regional council is also putting money in. We've had $18 million pledged from the regional council plus another two. And so that would be a 50% contribution from the region. And we think, using the roading analogy, that it's appropriate for the government to put in the other 50%. I guess in short, the local community cannot put in any more than the $5 million that they're already putting in. And that's always been the understanding we've briefed successive governments with.
Arahia, if the worst happens, if this money doesn't come through, what will that mean for the community, which the way you describe it to us has really pinned its hopes on this project for the future?
I guess from a very personal perspective, what's happening now is, you know, my cousins of those that can work have gone. They've gone to Australia. One cousin came back to pick up their son, and he said, no, I'm not going. I want to finish my last year of school. I want to be an electrician. I want to train. I want to do my apprenticeship in the Portiki. That was the end of last year. He couldn't do that, and he was put on a plane in March to go and join his parents. So we're suffering an exodus of people that are able to move. They've gone. So we are desperate to stop bleeding our people, but bring them home. We've got people who are contributing greatly to society in Australia. We want them home. We want to be able to give our kids who are at school the opportunity to be able to represent the Bay of Plenty in sports. They are so talented naturally. We need resources. We need money. We need their parents to be employed and working to be able to do that. So it affects every facet of our cultural and social input into this community.
So these 300 plus potential jobs would make all the difference to a township of Putiki's size.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Aileen, what about the time frame for this? I mean, what is your next step?
Well, the next step is to secure the funding. As I said, we're virtually ready to tender the job.
Now, what is your next step to try and wrest money from the government?
Well, we've asked the question, and I guess we're waiting a positive response from them. We've just had our community survey results come in, and 80% of our community see this project as very important. So 80% of our community are not going to go away. We're going to keep persisting. I guess that if we don't see some funding, I guess the impact is that it will be delayed. And there's in the order of $200 million at stake here in terms of the total investment package. And so I guess any delay funding it, we'll just see a delay in that happening. But this community isn't going to go away.
Thank you both very much. We will follow this project with you. That is Aileen Laurie and Arihua Tōra.